The Secrets of Doctor Who is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who, where we discuss everything about the hit BBC series, Doctor Who. And today we're discussing the Eighth Doctor Big Finish audio story, Scherzo. I'm Dom Bettinelli, and joining me today on the panel is Father Corey Stika. Hey, Father.
How's it going?
Very well, thanks. Jimmy is on assignment, as we like to say, which just means he's not able to be with us today, but we'll soldier on. And I want to encourage listeners and viewers on YouTube to write a review of the show on Apple Podcasts if you listen there, or wherever you can write reviews. We really do appreciate that. Give us a rating on Spotify, give us a like and a comment on YouTube, and also share the podcast with your friends on your social media or an email or wherever. Help us grow this community. Actually, I want to mention how we had one listener who asked for flyers for the show because he's going to a fan convention and he wants to take the flyers and leave them on the, there's like a table, usually a table where people can leave flyers promoting things. So any way you can help us get the word out about the show, we really do appreciate it. And I want to tell you about another show on the StarQuest Network I think you'll enjoy, which is called The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows, where we cover all kinds of other stuff besides, you know, Doctor Who and Star Trek and Star Wars and that sort of thing. So you can check that out wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/secrets. And also, stick around to the end. We do have more of your great listener feedback that we want to share. Usually this is where I would throw it to Jimmy and ask him to give us a recap, but I will endeavor to do that now. This week, the Eighth Doctor and his companion, Charlie, find themselves trapped in a glass tube in an unknown universe. They encounter a creature that feeds on sound or is made of sound, and it and they evolve together. They're forced to evolve and confront their fears as they struggle to find a way back to the safety of the TARDIS. The Doctor and Charlie face difficult choices and ultimately must confront their own mortality in a battle against the relentless force of this creature. As they fight for survival, they must also grapple with their own emotions and the limits of their own existence. The story explores themes of sacrifice, friendship, and the nature of evolution as the Doctor and Charlie fight to escape the creature's grasp and find their way back to the TARDIS. So, Father Corey, what was your overall impression of this story?
Very bizarre, but in a good way. I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was very well done. I thought I liked the idea of this creature that was basically pure sound, and yep. It was learning how to be sound, I guess, basically growing out of the sound. And of course, it was very interesting because there's only two voices, the Doctor and Charlie.
Yeah.
There's no other cast, no other people other than the sound creature who takes their voices and uses their voices. And so it was, like I said, it was bizarre. It was disturbing, but it was, again, all this in a very well done way. I mean, I really did enjoy it. And it was probably one of the clearest Big Finish stories we've had as far as not being confusing because it was a single location.
Yeah, that's true.
So that helped a lot.
And two actors, and that was it. Yeah. You're right. I agree. And I really like that it takes advantage of the medium. This is an audio story, and I don't think it would work as well as a visual story or as a book. I think, you know, as a printed story, I think this as an audio story is a great story for this because it relies so much on sound. And the fact is that they're blind for much of the story. We'll get into that, but they don't have the use of sight. And so they just have sound to rely on. And that's all what we have to rely on as the audience. So I really like that. It was clever. It was macabre. There was a lot of, there were elements of horror in it. Mm-hmm. Nothing too, you know, far out, nothing too gross. It was pretty far out, but it wasn't gross.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And I'm glad we did talked about it, and I'm glad they did it. And it reveals a lot about Charlie and the Doctor. It really, I mean, this is some pretty wild stuff that we get revealed about them. And I should point out, this is a, immediately follows on the last Eighth Doctor story, which was Neverland, mm-hmm. where the Doctor had been possessed by, what was the character? Zagreus.
Mm-hmm.
And President Romana had forced him into this divergent universe as a way of, you know, because he'd been possessed by this, by Zagreus. And then Charlie, and as a way of saving everyone else, but then Charlie leapt in after him. That's where this story begins. So I should mention the title, Scherzo, is a word, an Italian word, which means joke or jest. And it's used in music as a sort of light moment in the music, mm-hmm. an interlude in the moment, which is light, fast-paced, and playful, right. Which is interesting. Why do you think they used Scherzo as the title? Because very little of this felt light or playful.
Well, I think there was part of it where the creature was trying to be playful, trying to learn, trying to, you know... of course, you had the light that they were blinded by that they couldn't see. They lost their sense of sight. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of playing on the word light. But
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it is interesting because, yeah, when you think of something like a scherzo, this is a part of thing where it's, you know, the dance of the sugar plum fairies and the nutcracker suite. It would be like a scherzo type where right. it's very light and, you know, flighty and, you know, and so
and I don't know. It's part of a larger, always part of something larger. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, it's interesting. I'd be curious if any listeners have theories on why Scherzo. I don't think the wiki tells us why. I didn't actually look there ahead of time, but which I usually do so I can get nice little tidbits. But I don't think it did. So it's kind of interesting. So the story has sort of a frame narrative of Paul McGann as, I don't know if it as the Eighth Doctor or just as the narrator. I'm not sure how they mm-hmm. were doing this. Telling this tale, this fairy tale like story about a king who is cruel. He inherits a kingdom and his father says to him, what does he say? Don't be cruel.
Encourages him to be a dictator, but be a beloved dictator.
Right, right. That's what it is. It's better to be loved than to be feared, I think is what he said.
Yep.
Be feared, but be loved and feared, not just feared. But he ignores his father's advice, and he starts dictating unreasonably to people. Because it's a fairy tale, it goes overboard. He, you know, demands that the animals, like the dogs meow and cats bark, and and he forces things to go against their nature, and things start going weird. And he gets to the point where he bans music. He exiles music to the outer dark, by which they mean death. Mm-hmm. So he basically kills music, and it has the consequence of music. Everything musical, including voices, the sounds of nature, everything is no longer musical, and people start going mad. Mm-hmm. And then he has to go and rescind his banishment, but go and get music from the outer dark by in other words, taking himself to the point of death.
Right.
And music comes back, and then when it comes back, it comes back with a vengeance and starts killing with music, and it's mm-hmm. kind of, I mean, that the fairy tale part is pretty fascinating on its own.
Yeah And there's some interesting parts to it, you know, like there's some nice little one-liners in it in the fairy tale part. But I, you know, like you know, had the king had all the cats killed because cats don't listen to anybody anyways.
Right. They wouldn't. You know. Yeah, he couldn't give them orders because they don't listen to anybody. Yeah. That was good. Yeah,
it was very interesting. Whereas this king who was just not just a dictator among people, but a dictator over nature itself.
Right. Right. I get the music connection to the story. You know, that there's music or sound in both, but is it talking about that we're trying that, you know, the you can't control everything, mm-hmm. that you can't control nature itself, or if you try to, that it it will go wrong, it'll have bad consequences, or just or maybe it's the nature of music. Everything is music, which kind of brings me to mind of Tolkien and the Silmarillion, where music sang the world, the universe into being,
right?
In that, where God sang the universe into being, the where everything has music in it. Every sound is a, is an element of music. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I and especially with this this theme of a sound creature. Mm-hmm. You know, it starts, you know, as the doctor says, it starts learning music, you know, because you talk about languages where the pitch matters as much as the syllables you use.
Right. And
I think Vietnamese is one of those languages like that, where
oh, yeah.
you could have the same syllable because they don't have as many, they don't have as many, but they, how they pitch it depends on the meaning of the word and things like that.
Right.
So, yeah. And it's so like every, all sound went away when he banished music, because
yes,
music can rely on so many different forms of sound.
Right. I remember him saying at one point in the story, the waves no longer made noise. You know, there was no mm-hmm. because the sound of the waves breaking on shore is a kind of sound, which as someone who lives, you know, relatively close mm-hmm. to the ocean and loves the ocean, that is one of the things I love about the ocean is the sound of waves, all the different kinds of waves, waves that are after a storm or just calm waves, waves at night. It's really a quick story. When I was younger, camping at Acadia National Park up in Maine, and Maine has this rocky coastline. So you have most of the shoreline is big stone. So you don't hear the shush of waves on sand, you just hear right. it crashing on the stone. But the ocean was, there was no light, no artificial light as far as you could see, and the ocean would just move up and down, up and down. And I likened it at the time, the heartbeat of God. It was so massive, and just it's an amazing thing to feel so small next to this sound and this feeling. I just think it's fascinating to think about, you know, this idea of everything is an element of music. I mean, that's why I think why music is so fundamental to our human existence. Every culture has music because, in fact, this comes up in another Doctor Who story where it talks about the heartbeat in music. What was that? Oh, I'm trying to remember. It was a Master episode.
Was that? That wasn't like the end of, not the end of time. Was that the John Sims one?
It was one of the John Sims ones, yeah.
It was the second John Sims one. So that was the end of time.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and it came up with like the heartbeat and music. And I think, again, I think music is fundamental to human nature, to so much of what we are. You know, the angels sing in heaven, you know, around God in eternity. I mean, that's how fundamental music is. So well, yeah, kind of interesting.
Yeah, you look at the Book of Revelation and it talks about how on the saints too that they're singing the holy, holy, the Sanctus,
right? And so yeah, and so sound and music is fundamental to everything. So it's interesting to think about. So when we start, they're in the TARDIS. You know, that, it kind of starts from where the last story ended, and they're in the TARDIS, and this darkness is creeping in. And they're losing their senses. And the doctor reveals that Time Lords have more than the five physical senses. He says they also have senses related to sensing time, which is really cool because we've often seen where, especially in New Who, the doctor knows when in time he is. He'll step out of the TARDIS and go, oh, we're in, you know, 20th century Earth, not just because, you know, he senses the pollution in the air or whatever, but he just has this sense of innate sense of time. Right. And he says this new universe has no time.
Yeah, I'd say that we see that not as explicitly in Classic Who, but there are times where, you know, the Doctor will step out of the TARDIS and, oh, yeah, we're this generic century. You know, you won't be able to say we're in, you know, the year 2024, but we're in the 21st century.
Right,
Earth,
right.
You know, something like that, where he still has that sense of time and space that's more than just, you know, our five senses.
Yeah.
You know, it's something deeper.
And so all of the senses are getting stripped away. And so he it starts with his time senses, but eventually they lose everything but the hearing. And it's not darkness. It's interesting. It's light. It's it's so bright that they can't see.
Well, they also have the sense of touch, although even that fades at times.
That fades away.
Because they have the touch of each other. They're holding hands.
Right.
And but then there's points where, like, the doctor says, I'm squeezing you as hard as I can, and she can barely feel it.
Right. Exactly. And then it comes and goes as the creature feeds them, basically. Mm-hmm. It's trying to keep them alive by feeding them this evolving thing.
That's probably one of the most creepy parts of the whole thing, where they're literally being given this creature that starts out kind of almost like amoeboid, and starts developing more and more through evolution, more and more, you know, organs and parts of its body, and eventually it's more.
It looks like
humanoid.
Yeah, it looks like Charlie. In fact, at the end,
covered with hair, but looks like Charlie. Yeah,
yeah. The doctor theorizes that they ended up inside an experiment where there's nothing, so it's a completely empty space that somebody, some intelligence has created to observe evolution. And so the creature they're feeding on was what was supposed to be in there to evolve, and then they've showed up and created the sound creature by their arrival. The TARDIS apparently created it. And so they've kind of ruined this experiment, but are evolving along with the original creature that they're feeding on and the sound creature.
Right. Yeah, and it's the first sounds we hear from the sound creature is the TARDIS materialization noise. Because that's the first sound it heard or was created by it, if you will. Because it's a very different universe than ours. You know, like, because again, the doctor goes on this whole speech, rant, whatever you want to call it, that about how this is a universe without the concept of linear time, I guess. That was one part I was kind of like, okay, there's still an element of time.
There has to be, right?
But it's not. It's not impossible that time in an alternate universe could work very different than time does in ours.
Right. That's certainly true. And it's wibbly wobbly, right? It's almost sort of like, because they are progressing in time. They themselves are in time. They have one moment, then another.
Yep. The doctor ends up counting his heartbeat.
Yes.
His heartbeats, because he knows how rapidly his heart beats at certain times. So he's able to say, okay, my heart beats this many times per second or this many times per minute. So he could count from there.
Right. So they do have a sense of time, but time is wonky, and we just have to kind of accept that.
Yep.
The doctor goes through a lot of internal turmoil throughout this, more so than I think in most Doctor Who stories. And I mean, he's in despair at one point. He's angry at other points. You know, he's really angry with Charlie. Mm-hmm. He's in love with Charlie at one point too. And it's kind of an interesting range of emotions. Both he and Charlie, they both at one point or another, or several points, express their love for one another, which is kind of fascinating. And to where now I'm wondering, where does this go from here? How does this relationship, you know, progress, given what I know about the future of the doctor, but also just in the immediate future after this adventure? It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And it's, and of course, it is, you know, kind of think of, you know, between the TV movie where the Eighth Doctor first appeared and then everything after that, where the love is more than a platonic love.
Right.
You know, it's something much deeper, but and it was, that was a little bit confusing at times. Cause of course there was this whole thing with the being him basically being possessed. And I don't know if, I can't remember if that's been resolved at this point or not.
Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah. What, like, did getting pushed into this divergent universe?
There is another story that is in between, and it's a multi-doctor story that we haven't talked about.
Oh, really?
Zagreus.
Okay. We probably should have done that one next thing. I'm following the listing of the main line, you know, the Eighth Doctor main line, and that wasn't in the range. It's sort of outside of the Big Finish listing of the.
Well, it's, you know, those multi-doctor stories, you know, they're outside of, you know, the timeline. So
yeah, we'll have to go back and listen to that, because that would clarify some things, I guess. Interesting.
I mean, I would assume that story clears up that particular plot line, but it doesn't. The Doctor doesn't.
Yeah.
They still aren't out of the alternate universe yet.
Right. And even without that, apart from the Zagreus question, this doesn't suffer from not having listened to that story, right?
No.
You don't feel lost in this.
But his emotional state, his everything that's going on, it really shows a side to the Eighth Doctor that I don't think we'd really seen yet, because he's, you know, generally pretty jovial, kind of blunt sometimes, but pretty jovial as a doctor.
Yeah.
But then you get this doctor where, yeah, he's like, he's yelling at Charlie about, I didn't want you here. I didn't want you following me. I didn't want you joining me.
You deprived me of my right to die alone, he says at one point. And he's mad because he wanted to save her. And she kind of points out, well, you know, I'm mad because you wanted to die without me. If you have a right to die for me, I have a right to die for you. It's equal, which is interesting.
And that actually ends up being the solution, is that
right.
they were willing to die for each other, not for themselves, but for each other. And that ends up basically crippling the sound monster. Now, it wasn't killed,
right?
But it lost everything. It was just back to its first state, basically.
You know, there's a lot of marital imagery in this with them. I mean, there's, at one point, they literally become one flesh. You know, their hands fuse together. They evolve into one. And she eventually pushes into him. She enters into him. Yeah, I don't want to get too overboard with the marital imagery, the physical marital imagery. But there is a sense of this complete self-giving, which is a part of marriage, where we give ourselves completely to each other in vulnerability and for the good of the other. He sacrificing self. The doctor sacrificed his life in love for Charlie, and he says she threw it away by following him. But she says, "I sacrificed myself in love for you," and the purpose of self-sacrificial love is they're together till death. I mean, that's the whole idea. They're now together. And this is really, like I said, marital imagery, really fascinating.
Very, very much so. And we can even go to a deeper level spiritually of the unity that we are to have with God, where we are not quite to lose ourselves in God. You know, that's actually getting more Buddhist, the idea of, losing yourself completely. That's what nirvana is. But to totally unite ourselves with God, to turn our lives over to God so completely that we're in perfect union with Him. That's what heaven is.
Right. Right. Exactly. That part is fascinating. There's also a lot of talk of mortality. And in fact, the doctor reveals, he asks Charlie, why do you think I have companions? I'm seen as this weirdo among the Time Lords because I've always got companions. They have a theory that I take companions as a memento mori, a remembrance of mortality, because he's so long lived that having short lived humans, relatively short lived, reminds him of the possibility of mortality and reminds him of all things end. And if as a creature that outlives almost every other intelligent creature that they know, it is a danger for the Time Lords to maybe start to think of themselves as gods, that's sort of the Q problem from Star Trek.
Well, that's themes that we see come out throughout the history of Doctor Who, especially, as they've developed the Time Lords, that, you think of the Trial of the Time Lord, Sixth Doctor, how cruel and, arrogant the Time Lords have become. And of course, being said by one of the more cruel and arrogant doctors, but it's a theme that we see it through Classic Who, or later Classic Who. We see it throughout New Who, the Time Lords have become with their almost immortality.
Right. Right. So there are a couple of lines that I thought were really good. I just wanted to highlight from my notes. In the tale of the Tyrant King, there's a line, anything could be born with music and nothing could be born without it. In other words, there's a little bit of a pun to bear with it. I can bear anything. Anything can be born in that sense. But also, anything can be created when you have music inspires, and we can create anything with it. And without music, we can't, you know, we just can't, there's no art. Like, I think even, you know, in the visual mediums, physical mediums, that sort of thing, you know, how many creators, people who write things where they need music to inspire, yeah. Or even if it's not just like, human created music, but sound of nature or the mm-hmm. sounds of the world around them helps them to be inspired. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. There's lots of, you know, artists who they'll go to some cabin in the woods or some place like, yeah, the little shack by the ocean type of thing. You think of Hemingway, you know, in Cuba, that was a big part of it.
Yep.
Yeah. But also, you know, you talk about, you know, bearing everything. Well, that's Charlie. She's at one point, she's whistling Frère Jacques.
Yeah.
Because the tedium where sound is all they have, at least that gives her something to focus on from her that's not, you know, that's not blocked.
Right.
Because all the other senses are blocked.
Because otherwise there's no sound. Like there's the sound of their footsteps and yep. nothing else. And so, you know, she needs something. And that's sort of related to that story of the tale of the tyrant king who banished mm-hmm. music. She needs something her brain, her nature needs it. There's another line too. I really like when the doctor and Charlie, they get at one point, they come to like their prison and their, mm-hmm. and the torture that they're undergoing. They sort of have a Stockholm syndrome or sort of thing going on where it's become so familiar. They've been walking for so long. You know, the doctor estimates they perhaps been walking for months at this point. He says, obviously, if I had the choice between traveling through all time and space in total freedom or walking blindly down a glass tube, only stopping once in a while to sample the local cuisine and have my neck nibbled, I'd choose the former.
Yeah. Which I thought
was the classic understatement. Yes.
Well, and they're really accepting, like, Stockholm syndrome is a very good phrase for it. You know, accepting slavery is another, you know, well, you know, yeah, we're slaves, but hey, at least we've got, you know, three squares, a hot and a cot, you know,
type
of deal.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a fascinating, like it's so well written because we see all of these different elements in this story. Like they really draw out a lot of character elements, and that's really what this is, a character study of these two people. And we draw so much out of these characters that we know so well, especially the doctor we know so well. Mm-hmm. And there's so much that they draw out of him in this story. I think it's fascinating, and they do it with so little. You know, and so it really becomes a good story that way.
Yeah, they did a great job with just the sound scenery, you know.
Yes, definitely. The sound design on this was really well done. At times, I was glad I was listening without headphones on because sometimes when the creature would like screech, and I'm like, oh, I'm glad I'm not wearing headphones for that.
There was one point where there was just a solid thump.
Yes.
And I, you know, if you watch the video, you see I wear headphones. Well, I wear headphones and I'm listening to Big Finish because it helps me to better understand.
Yeah.
Oh, that hurt. So, you know, listener warning, if you're like me, you wear headphones when you listen to these, there will be one point where it's going to get you.
Yeah. 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 Keep the sound down, the volume down. Any other notes on this, Father Corey?
Speaking of quotes, there's one quote I loved where the very beginning where the doctor's starting to tell his stories where the first king, the king who passed on the kingdom, mm-hmm. he said he was good when good was something of an unfashionable rarity.
Yes.
That's a great way to phrase it. Kind of, you know, kind of pithy and kind of clever, but it's a good way to phrase it too, that, you know, there are times in human life times in human culture when the good leaders are the rarity.
You know? Right.
And it's kind of, again, a kind of a warning for, we don't want to see that happen in our day and age, though it sure feels like it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another interesting, and talking about the memento mori of the companions, eventually the sound creature, they describe that it was an amalgam of the doctor's previous companions with Charlie's face. I forgot about that. And I haven't seen on my notes where that's kind of a creepy, interesting idea.
Yeah, I missed that. That got by me. That's interesting. An amalgam of his companions, which seems to say that maybe it's telepathic as well. Would have picked it up.
I would assume so. I mean, there's a lot of that. That sure seems like that it was feeding not just off the sound, but also the mental, the thoughts of these two.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, so I think that does it for our discussion of Scherzo, and we'll of course would love to get listener feedback on that and anything that you appreciated from it. I recommend it. It's one of the mm-hmm. better Big Finish stories I've heard. It's really fascinating and interesting to listen.
I'd agree with that 100%. It was, yeah. It was, like I said, it was bizarre, but it was a bizarre in a good way. It was bizarre like the way a Hitchcock movie can be bizarre.
Yes, yes. It's very sort of X-Files-y. It's like bizarre, like the best of the Doctor Who video visual stories, the TV stories, mm-hmm. like the
Midnight.
Midnight, thank you. So I was thinking Mirror, but no, Midnight. Like that is bizarre like that. So, yeah, it was really good. Really recommend it. So let's get to that feedback I mentioned. Our first feedback comes on our discussion of the second Doctor story, The Invasion. MS wrote on YouTube, Douglas Camfield is another Doctor Who director who manages to keep both plot and characters interesting. His pacing of longer stories was more reliable than most. Dalek's Master Plan, Inferno, Web of Fear, they'll all come to mind. And Invasion is no exception. He also understood the Brigadier, and I think we got some of Nick Courtney's best under his direction, instead of the ill-mannered one-dimensional Brigadier you mentioned. Camfield also liked casting Kevin Stoney in roles requiring reliable character actors. I enjoyed discovering him in some episode or other from 60s, 70s, and 80s television. Oh, yes. Thanks for mentioning Vaughn's outburst with that sadistic booby Packer. I had a good laugh. When the mood strikes us, usually when one of our kids does something foolhardy, my wife and I have been known to look at each other and say, Packer!
Yeah.
Cheers. A fun episode. I'm sure I say it in the Boston accent, and you have a nice English accent, I'm sure. But
Yeah, it's interesting because I think this was the first time I'd seen this. When we talked about it, it was the first time I'd seen this one, and the Brigadier is very different than what he becomes during the Third Doctor's era. And admittedly, part of that is he had to deal with the Third Doctor throughout the Third Doctor's era. And so I can understand why he became more shouty and things like that. But no, and it was a great story. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. I have to say the Brigadier is one of my favorite Doctor Who characters, like secondary characters. I really enjoy him in all his various appearances. But yeah, dealing with Pertwee's Doctor, I'm sure after the second Doctor, is had to have been a bit of a change for the Brigadier. And then on our third Doctor story, speaking of the third Doctor, Frontier in Space, Marin Anguish on YouTube writes, I haven't watched it in a while, but have fond memories of it. Delgado's master was the best master, in my opinion. And, you know, I kind of agree. Of all the masters we've seen, I mean, I really like Missy, mm-hmm. but I like Delgado's master because he's the bad guy without being, like, having to be crazy villain, like, Joker style, you know? And there's something I liked about that over the he's a bad guy because he's mentally deranged sort of thing, you know. There's a different kind of bad guy.
He was much more sophisticated in his evil doing.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point of he would give the Doctor props when the Doctor would.
Right.
You know, he'd be upset, but he'd give props to the Doctor for foiling his plans again.
And he's so urbane and civil, and you almost like him at times, you know? Yeah, it's like...
you'd almost be like, oh, you can kill me, Master, or we could sit down to tea. Which would you prefer?
Yes.
Right. And you wouldn't know which answer it would be, but at least, you know...
Yes, exactly.
Either or equally likely. No, I agree. I like Delgado's as well. I mean, Sacha Dhawan's was great. You know, I really enjoyed his. Missy was just off-the-wall bonkers, but great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've had some good masters, but Delgado, and it is sad that, you know, he did, you know, die, you know, suddenly in a car accident, and it's too bad because it could have probably had him for many more years.
Oh, yeah. Well, in fact, you mentioned that someone on Discord, I forgot to get the comment and the person who said it ahead of time, but so someone on our Discord server said that one of the reasons why Pertwee quit as the third Doctor was because he was such great friends with Delgado, mm-hmm. and he was so broken up by his sudden death in a car accident in Turkey, soon after this was made, and so that kind of took the joy of playing the Doctor out of it for him, something along those lines.
I could imagine because it was the the first Master, the Delgado Master, was so much a part of the third Doctor's era. I mean, easily half the stories in some way or another involved the Master. I mean,
yeah.
Because there's a whole season that involved the Master.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So I could imagine. Yeah. And that it would, you know, so rest in peace, Roger Delgado. Thank you for the joy you've brought us with the evil Master. Yeah. And thank you to the listeners who've sent in this feedback. We really do appreciate it. And now we'd like to thank some important people. We'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Doctor Who, including Jacob D., Matthew D., Dominic M., Paul D., and Jack B. Their generous tax-deductible donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Doctor Who and all the shows at StarQuest, and you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And we'd also like to thank Simon Yannick, who edited this episode. So that's it from us. What did you think of Scherzo, this Eighth Doctor story? You can let us know by commenting on the show at sqpn.com or the Secrets of Doctor Who Facebook page. Send an email to doctorwho@sqpn.com. Visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/discord. Or comment on our YouTube channel, where you can watch the Secrets of Doctor Who at youtube.com/starquestmedia. We'll be back next time when we'll be discussing the Fourth Doctor story, The Power of Krall. Until then, Father Corey Stika, thank you for joining me in sharing the Secrets of Doctor Who.
Thank you, Dom.
And I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to the Secrets of Doctor Who on StarQuest. And remember, once upon a time, in a land not too dissimilar to ours, there lived a king. And he was a good king, in an age when good was something of an unfashionable rarity.